Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Listen to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSG family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just gonna jump right into it. I always talk.
Gambling.
What do
you think about gambling?
It's
not gambling when you know you're gonna win.
He's not coming out late. The RSG family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. Welcome back to another week of Inside the Park. No more split squads this week. We got the whole team. We got Hank, we got Mike, and all the guys are ready to go. So we're going to jump right into it. We had a pretty busy week on the baseball front this past week. A lot of stuff going on. We're going to try to hit as much of it as we can. We're also going to finish up our buyers and sellers. Last week we did the American League buyers and sellers, and we went through who we thought teams should pick up or get rid of. If you missed that, definitely go on iTunes, download the podcast under the Real Sports Guys search, and you can hear our AL picks. This week we're going to hit the NL, and we'll just jump right into it. This week, the Diamondbacks owner, Arizona Diamondbacks owner, Ken Kendricks, had some choice words for a couple of his players. He kind of went George Steinbrenner on us. Stephen Drew is the Diamondbacks shortstop who's been out all year and missed a lot of time last year. If you saw the play, he kind of broke his ankle in two, and he hasn't been able to play since. The owner's getting frustrated with Stephen Drew. Called him out, said that basically he feels as if Stephen Drew should be out there. It's about time for him to start playing. And he also said that he believes that Stephen Drew and his representatives are more focused on where Stephen will be playing next year because he does have a chance to become a free agent next year. He feels as if he's trying to preserve himself so that he's healthy next year rather than playing for the team, and these were his words, rather than playing for the team that's paying his salary now. Mike, do you have any issue with Kendrick calling out his guy?
I do, and because the owner's speaking like a fan, right, and he's speaking with emotion. And the problem with that is as soon as it's okay for owners to say that to players, it's okay for players to say that about owners. And then you're going to hear, you know, a player going, hey, we're not spending any money because the owner's too cheap, because he wants to pay his bills, because he wants to do this. And even though it may be true, now let's be honest, Stephen Drew brings this on himself, one, by the agent he has, and two, you know, his brother preceded him in reputation, you know, is having that kind of a slacker attitude, not playing hard, not playing hurt. But as much as you want to say that, as much as you like your owner saying that, it's just not a good thing because it can't be a two-way street.
Yeah, it's funny. And let me give the listeners a little bit of what he said about Justin Upton as well before we jump to Hank. He also called out his all-star outfielder, Justin Upton. And I'm just going to read the quote directly. He said, I think Justin is a bit of an enigma at this point. I know he had an injury early on, maybe a little bit of a nagging injury, but he played. He's 24 years old, and it's time for him to be a consistent performer. And right now, this year, he has not been that. So not only did he call out Stephen Drew, who hasn't been on the field at all this year, he also went in his all-star outfielder, who's getting off to a bit of a rough start. Hank, where do you come out on Ken Kendrick going George Steinbrenner on the team?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm glad to be back. I missed you guys last week. The, You know what? I've been thinking long and hard about this. You say going George Steinbrenner on them, but now when you think about when George Steinbrenner went out on guys, you know, they kind of produced. And I'm looking at him, Kendrick, trying to do the same thing. Now, with Drew, the fact that I believe that when I read the article, it sounds like he doesn't expect to have Drew back anyway, you know, and that maybe there's more to that ankle than meets the eye. So, you know, maybe he's trying to either move him at the trade deadline or something along those lines. That's what I read into that. With Upton, you know, again, he got a young player. Maybe he feels that he can do that. I don't really have as much of a problem with it, looking at the players that he got and looking where the Diamondbacks are this year. Now, this is the team that won the West last year. They're playing somewhat of a lethargic ball. I think that they're second or third in the division. And, you know, it's like, the third in the division. And it's like, you know, he's trying to provide a spark for this team, you know. That's the way I'm seeing it. I don't really have a problem with it. I know he's expecting more from Upton, and I think he's looking to move Drew.
Okay. Let me take you guys in this direction and see what you think. This is what I thought when I read the quote. And I find it kind of amusing because he kind of wants his cake and eat it, and he wants to eat it too. He's asking. He sounds like a spoiled rich kid to me. He's asking Stephen Drew, "Hey, I know you may not be 100%, but we're paying you. I want you out on that field, and I know you're going to be a free agent, or you could be a free agent next year, and you don't want to risk injury. But hey, I need you out there, 80%, 100%, wherever you are." I need you out there. And then he talks about Justin Upton, and he says, you know, his direct quote was, "I know he had an injury early on, and it may be a bit of a nagging injury." So Justin Upton is out there playing hurt, and he's not playing up to Justin Upton's capabilities, maybe because he's hurt, yet he's calling out his star for not producing. So he wants Stephen Drew to play whether he's 100% or not. But someone else is doing that, Justin Upton, and he's not playing to the Justin Upton that we know he can be. He has a problem with that as well. So it's like you can't make this guy happy. And, you know, therefore, I'm siding with the players on this one. I mean, you got to protect your investment, which is your body. And, you know, if your owner's going to call you out if you're playing at 80% or not, why not go up to 100%?
Well, again, I look at it is that, you know, just because of the players that he mentioned, you know, and again when you look at Drew, I think that's just a calculated move, you know. When you look at everything else that was said, that he's in a 1-year contract, chances are he won't play this year. And given these comments, he may not. But I'm looking at an owner that's like, okay, I've got to make a move. This is a kid I could probably move if I can get him on the field, you know. Kind of a calculated move. I think it's calculated. I think it's very calculated. But, you know, again, when you're looking at the Diamondbacks, you know, they're 9 games out in the West, you know, and he's trying to get a spark for this team. That's just the way I see it. I'm reading a little bit more into it than just the comments themselves.
Okay, if you were a player in that organization, let's say you were looking at a nice-sized contract if you were healthy, and maybe not so nice contract if you weren't healthy. If you're at 80% or 75%, are you going to rush back when your owner is killing players who are playing at 80%, like Justin Upton?
Absolutely not. I mean, and who would? I mean, if we're talking about an injury right now, and we're still talking about, you know, just a third of the season going through, you know, if you know, anybody collapses at any time, you want to be as healthy as you can be, you know, and a lot of these players aren't going to rush back in early June. They're going to wait until and see at least till the All-Star break and see where they're at and see where the team is at. That's just smart. And if I am an agent of this player, I would tell him the same thing. You need to cool it. You don't need to be on the field. And I think that's what the owner is saying. It's like, well, hell, I need to see what he got and see if I can move him or not. Yeah, you can call it selfish. It is very selfish. But again, I'm thinking he's looking at long term. You know, where the player has to look at his career. I agree with that.
What do you think, Mike?
I think it's bogus. I think that we all like rooting for players that want to win, right? And if you're making it, and I understand it's a business, but if a player's making his decision so he can get a better contract next year instead of helping a team that needs a spark like him, then I don't need that type of player on my team. I really don't. And I think, like I said, I think the owner's on. He's talking from the heart here, but the problem is he can't do that. Really, that needs to come from a manager and not an owner. And that's why ownership has a tough time inserting themselves in here and being effective with it. The reason I think that Steinbrenner could get away with that is he had the biggest payroll in baseball. He could always attract people to New York. He had, you know, at least if not the best team, always trying to get the best team. And so people wanted to play there. They wanted the cash. What is Arizona going to do? How are they going to lure free agents? If the free agent says, hey, if I don't, you know, play hurt, the owner's going to call me out. You know, this may be a long-term problem for them. So I think he's got to shut it down, the owner, as far as just shutting his mouth. Otherwise, he's going to have a tough time signing free agents there.
Okay. I definitely agree he needs to shut his mouth. But you're saying Steven Drew should be out there playing, whether he's 75% or not?
Well, think about it. As a fan, what athletes do we cheer for, right? Do we cheer for Paul Pierce when he, you know, his leg falls off, but yet he comes out and he plays hurt and he does it? You know, is it come on, who's the guy with the Knicks who hurt his leg and came back out, you know, for the I think it was the 73 championship series. I'm forgetting my name.
Willis Reed.
Willis Reed, yeah. Willis Reed. But, I mean, they're playing with guts and, you know, you may not be able to be the full player you were before, but to get up there and say, hey, we need your presence on that field, come on and help us out, you know, I'd like to think that a player can do that. And I would hope that an owner would have more information than us, than the press, than anyone else, and be able to make that comment from a position of knowledge and strength and going, listen, the trainer said he can do it, but he's going to be in pain. Then, you know, do it. And I'll go back to it. His brother was notorious for not playing hurt. J.D. Drew, right? Notorious. Mm-hmm. Got chased out of Atlanta, St. Louis, and Boston. You know, he was another guy with a $1 million talent and a 5-cent head. People, his teammates could not stand him because he played not to get hurt. He played to get another contract, and he was one of the least liked players in baseball. And I think his brother's kind of going down that same route. And you look at the agent, you know, maybe the owner's got a point.
All right.
I mean, who remembers J.D. Drew? Getting just jammed
out of him. J.D. Drew.
Yeah, but you know, in Steven Drew's defense, if he's on my team, I don't want a shortstop with a bad wheel. I mean, maybe an outfield or a catcher, first base, even you can gut it out. This guy plays shortstop. He needs his ankles. So
right.
I'd pass on 75% of Steven Drew at shortstop.
Yeah, you can play him at third. There's a lot of things you can do to protect the ankle. You know, but if he's not even going to go out there and give you pinch hit at bats when the team is struggling in a division, then I think they have a chance to win if they can put something together. You know, with Matt Kemp going down, you know, long term, I'm sure Arizona's thinking we got a chance. We just need to get going, and they want all hands on deck.
Sounds good. let's move on to the All-Star game. It looks like Major League Baseball is going to allow their players to use social media. Players can use Twitter. They can send out pictures during the game. They can tweet during the All-Star game. What are your thoughts on this one, Hank? Good idea? Bad idea? I mean, we've talked before on how MLB can improve. Did they get this one right?
You know what? What they've basically done is just turned the All-Star game, in my opinion, into a circus with this one. Now, I know that a lot of these other sports are doing it. I know that the NBA and the NFL, you know, is notorious for those tweets to come out when things are going on in the league. But when you think about the All-Star game, if you're a baseball purist, you just think about what it was all about. You know, now you're going to have the players tweeting and saying these things and that things. And I guess, you know, for today, I guess it's okay. To me, it don't float my boat at all. You know, if they're going to interview the players, and interview the players. But if they're already going to be overly distracted, you know, while playing the game, then what are we really going to get for an All-Star game? You know, for even for those who still want to watch, you know, it seems like it's going to be a hell of a lot more than just watching the ball game. So, you know, it don't do nothing for me. that's me though.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you use any of the social media out there?
Well, yeah. I can't find out nothing that's going on in the world unless I look at Facebook. they get it before the newspaper do.
All right. What about you, Mike?
I couldn't care less, to be honest with you. I think baseball's tapping into what's going on today. They're trying to be hip and get information out there. And really, what's different between, you know, supporting social media in the dugout and having a camera in the dugout and doing interviews mid-inning? What's the difference? I don't see a difference.
I agree.
But you got more people that are following. Brandon Phillips is a great example of that. That dude BP, he's huge into that, and he's got a big following, and it's a good way for him to reach his fan base. And so if that's the way you're going to connect with young viewers, young fans, then I think you got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago how baseball is losing the young fan. I think this is a perfect way to get people interested in the All-Star game, which has been quite boring, if you ask me, for some time now. I think it's a brilliant idea. I'm excited about it. I will throw out there, I do use Twitter, so I'm looking forward to seeing somebody like Brandon Phillips maybe tweeting a picture of the clubhouse before the game. Or, you know, sending out little pictures about what the guys are doing during the home run derby. Or maybe, you know, you can shoot a video and send it to all your followers. I'm looking forward to that. It's got me excited. I know it's got a lot of younger people excited, which is definitely what baseball needs. The one thing I will say, though, if the All-Star game is going to count for home field advantage, you can't have guys using social media. I mean, if I play for the Yankees or the whoever else has a shot at making the playoffs, I'd be pretty pissed off if somebody's on the bench shooting a video or taking pictures to send to their followers while we're competing for home field. So I'm all for the use of social media. They got to get this home field. The winner gets home field in the World Series. You can't have it both ways. Agreed.
I agree with you on that one. I think that, you know, if they're going to do that social media thing, I think they should do it for the other events, like your home run derby or something like that, or even, you know, at a certain time, even during introductions. But you made a point that I had just even didn't think about that, you know, that there's still, you know, you still get home field for the World Series. Now they're out there, and they made a spectacle out of it. You know, so how hard are they going to really play? You know, and some poor team at the end of the year, will lose home field because, you know, of the All-Star game.
Yeah, that would send, I'm sure that sends somebody like Derek Jeter through the roof to see, Adrian Beltre taking a picture or something during the game.
Right.
What about you?
I don't think it's any different from the other distractions, and I'm trying to remember back if it was Albert Bell or Frank Thomas who hit in the first couple innings and then left. Just left the ballpark.
Yeah,
you remember that?
Count that day.
Now, who was that?
I think it was Albert Bell. I mean, there's
okay.
been a lot
sounds
of guys.
Sounds like Albert Bell.
But, to me, you're right. There's a conflict of interest going on. Either it's competitive or it's fun. One of the two. You have a tough time mixing those two. I get your point. You got to have one theme. You can't have two there. In the end, I think it's a sideshow already that half the guys don't take it seriously, and I'm fine with that. So the fact that they add to it more of a playful atmosphere, it's already not serious.
All right. Well,
it's been a long time since Pete Rose ran into Ray Fosse at the plate, you know, basically ending his career to win the game. So you just don't see that anymore.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I'm all for the social media. But you can't make it dependent upon home field advantage of the World Series. That's ridiculous. So how's the riddle go? If a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, does it make a sound? Did I get that right?
Close enough. Go with it.
Well, we had a tree fall in the forest on Wednesday, on Tuesday, actually. A Major League Baseball draft took place Monday, Tuesday, and I believe Wednesday, today. Did any of you guys watch 10 minutes of this?
I did.
I did,
you
too.
Did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So what was your take on the draft, Mike?
My take on the draft. Well, I'm going to pull back from a couple weeks ago and say that it's not a full draft until they have international players as part of the draft. That's my first thing on it, right? The biggest thing, I was thinking about this a lot today, because we've got all the major sports, right? And I'll include soccer in this. You include Olympic, whatever you want. And you talk about the prime of athletes and when they're the prime of their sport. And for most sports, that's going to be between the ages of, I'd say, 21 and 26, 27. But basketball, you have 18-year-olds that are coming in and making huge impacts. Football, you've got rookies at 21, 22-year-olds making big impacts. And baseball's not like that. And I'm trying to think why that is. And sometimes the system and the process hurts the talent. And I'm going to tip my hand a little bit towards Dog of the Week so you guys don't take it. And I'm going to use Bryce Harper as a really good example, okay? Here's a kid who is just full of talent, all right? But baseball philosophy, or, you know, a.k.a. RJ, says that a kid that young isn't ready. Shouldn't be up there. You're spoiling them, you know? Baseball needs to do a better job of shortening the time between kids are drafted. And I'm not talking high school kids, you know, unless they're just off the charts. Maybe those college players, between the time they get drafted and they get up in the majors. I think that baseball is really saddled with too many players that are 32 to 37 years old, you know, hitting 250 and whatnot. Let's get some youth on the field. Let's get some excitement on the field. And I don't think it'd be a huge change, but I think they need to do a better job at getting players through their system. And when they do that, the draft becomes more relevant because casual fans can put two and two together between, hey, we just picked this guy, and a year and a half from now, I see him in the big leagues. That's a rarity now. I think they need to make sure that happens more often, and that's by getting those players through and giving them a shot.
A couple problems with your argument.
Do it.
And I got to get in there because I know I think Hank's going to get you too. Everybody is not Bryce Harper. You just chose probably the best young prospect outside of since Ken Griffey Jr. and said, because Bryce can do it, we should do it with everybody else.
All right, let me show you another one. Mike Leake. Here's a guy who's a middle-of-the-road starter, right? But he never spent a day in the minors because the Reds said, hey, he can be a number four or five starter now. Let's get him up here. First-round pick, didn't spend a day in the minors, playing in the major league level, and he's an average starter right now. He probably could have used some time, but you know what? They get a bang for their buck right away, and he's filling a hole for the team. So I don't think you have Griffey Jr. to do that. I think there's a lot of first-round talent. In fact, let me put it this way. I believe if you're good enough to be drafted in the first round of the Major League draft, that you should really be able to make a 40-man roster.
Okay, now let me say this then. And I know, Hank, I'm going to let you get in, but Mike has surprised me with his argument right now. You're saying you use Mike Leake, who you said was a first-round pick, and they said, we're going to throw you in there because you can be a four or five starter.
Yep.
Mike Leake hasn't progressed much from a four or five starter. I don't follow the Reds like you do, but I'm quite certain he hasn't progressed much, correct?
No, he's a four starter. He is.
Okay. So when I take a first rounder, and this is how, or if I were to take a first rounder, if I was a GM, I would expect my first rounder to come up and be a one or a two, at least a three. If I'm taking you in the first round, Steven Strasburg, he's an ace. There's many other first-rounders. You don't expect them to be a four or five. You can draft all the first-round pitchers you want, but if you just throw them in there to the fire and all they become is four or fives, you're not going to be any good. You need aces. You need twos. You need threes. It doesn't work that way.
Why not? Why is baseball more complex than other sports that kids can't handle it when they're 22 years old? Why is it that baseball trends
There's
so
a larger disparity between a high school player and an MLB player or a college player and an MLB player. If most college kids can't jump into AAA and be successful. Most.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference. What do you say, Hank?
Well, let me. I agree.
With
that
who?
You can't. I mean, with this. I agree with the argument. No, listen. When you're talking about drafting high schoolers, it's the same argument the NFL had when they had that lawsuit where players were trying to come out early, simply saying that they weren't ready to play at the NFL level. Baseball is at the same thing. You can't say that if you're a high schooler and you're looking at high school pitchers, some of these kids are not going to see a major league stadium in their life, okay? And you're teeing off on high school pitching, or you're teeing off on college pitching. That's not major league pitching. I understand the idea, and even with the arms, you have to develop a arm to pitch. You have to develop an arm. You got to develop an eye to hit major league pitching, you know. So I can understand, you know, developing the players, and I actually like baseball's development. I think to Mike's point, I think maybe they leave them in the minors too long, and some of those kids just die on the farm. I think that if you've got some talent out there and you've seen that it is progressing, that you do bring them up. But the problem with baseball again is that. You know, you've got it so diluted with the talent. You're bringing these kids up so fast, or you know they're bringing them to the league, and they're playing A ball, double A ball. So by the time they do get to the league, you're right. You know, they're 25, 26, 27 year old rookies, and then they still may not make the roster. So you know, with the Bryce Harper's notwithstanding, what do you do with the rest of these players? But the one thing that that bothers me the most about the draft. Is the fact that you will have teams, you know, go away from the talent that they need. They will not draft talent that they need simply because they can't sign them. That's the thing that drives me nuts. That the guy could be the top prospect of the whole draft, and a team will pass on him simply because of signability. That is the craziest thing I have ever heard. You know, the Major League Baseball and the collective bargaining agreement needs to do a better job that if that player is available, that they should be able to sign that guy. That drove me nuts that, well, we couldn't sign him, so we took somebody else. So you think about when you look in the history of guys that went to other teams, but your team was there, that guy was available for you, but you didn't feel like you could sign him. That's the one thing that I heard a lot of while I was watching that draft that was just mind-boggling to me.
Something to that, see, hey, and baseball this year they initiated not necessarily a salary cap but a rookie pool that they had in place along with penalties, a luxury tax if you went over that amount for your rookies. But you know, the pitcher you're referring to, I believe, is RJ helped me out, is
the kid from Stanford.
Yeah.
Appel.
Right, because
yeah.
Was his agent. And they figured Boris was going to find a way to cheat the system and make a team pay if they wanted to get him, because he had already committed to Stanford, right?
Right. What it was, Boris told the Astros he wants $6 million. And teams, I think they're limited to spending $7 million on all their draft picks. So at $6 million, Appel would have eaten up the majority of Houston Astros' money to sign other draft picks.
Yeah, and you know what, if you think about that, I mean, that's a ridiculous notion. If you talk about the washout ratio for high school and college pitchers and the injury ratio for that, that kid would be insane to walk away from anything close to that amount of money. So I really think his agent's doing him a disservice unless he's willing to take less. You know, but to get back to my point before, really what I'm talking about, if you want the draft to be relevant to the common fan, the everyday fan, you've got to shorten the time period between when they're drafted and when you see them on the field. And that may take a change in draft strategy, okay? That may mean that we don't pick a guy in the first round who's going to take 5 years to develop. We may pick him in the second or third, but my first-round guy is going to be someone who can make an impact in a couple of years. And I'm thinking more of a transition to college players. That's tough now because of the aluminum bat, but I think you guys get my point here, that if you want the draft to have more relevance to the common fan, they need to be able to shorten the time frame between the draft and when you actually see those players on the field.
Here, here. Now let me also throw this out there real quick, Mike, because I got to call you to the carpet. You killed me for saying that the Phillies, for firing off on the Phillies for signing Juan Pierre and not letting Dominic Brown play, who's played 2 years in AAA and has killed it in AAA. You killed me for that, and now it sounds like you're on my side. So I want to welcome you to the right side. Thank you.
I didn't know your skin was so thin. I'm sorry. I'll take it.
I'm just glad that you're realizing now that these young players need to play.
I can call you on the carpet for the same that we go back and forth depending on the situation. But, you know, I think what you're missing in baseball right now, and I think this is obvious, it's the elephant in the room, is that the reason baseball is losing the young fan is we don't have a lot of young players in it. We really don't. We, you know, if you're all stars and your new, you know, big guys are, you know, the Joey Votto type who look, you know, acts like he's 42 right now, you know, Bryce Harper brings amount of excitement, and that's not just because he's super talented. It's because he's 19, 20 years old, and those kids are fun to watch. They really are. They bring a certain amount of excitement to the game. So I wouldn't push away from that. And let's talk about the real reason behind that. It's not that those players can't be one of the 40 best players. But teams are unwilling to burn up those 6 arbitration years in the development phase at the big leagues. Because if you say, hey, I could develop him in the big leagues and he'll do okay, he'll get where he's going, but I'm going to lose 2 years of productivity, or do I keep him in the minors, hit him until he's just right, and then I bring him up at 25, 26, that's the real issue here. I mean, if teams didn't have to worry about losing players after 6 years, then this wouldn't be an issue. You'd have the best 40 players up there. But we don't have that now.
No, we don't. But some of the smart teams are starting to get it. You mentioned Bryce Harper and the Nats. Case in point, Mike Trout with the Angels. I mean, they got rid of Bobby Abreu so this young kid could play. And if you haven't watched him play, he's must-see TV. And his numbers are actually better than Bryce Harper's. So some teams are starting to get it. And Mike Trout is one of the kids to watch. So let's go ahead and jump into Dog of the Week. Get this show rolling. Here we are, Dog of the Week.
Now we're gonna get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right, Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Hank, who you got?
Well, I can't resist this one. This young man, you know, you thought his career was dead. You know, you thought he was injured. He was going to be just wallowing in obscurity with the Mets. And what does he do? Come out and throw the first no-hitter in Mets history. Johan Santana, you are a dog.
All right, who you got, Mike?
I already tipped my hand on this one, but I'm going to go Bryce Harper. Just to waft it around in your face a little bit, I know. It's a little immature of me, but, you know, me and Bryce are like that. Kids hitting 370, 13 games, 13 runs scored, 5 home runs. And I believe over the weekend, if not Monday, had his first walk-off hit. And whether you like him or not, he's playing up to the competition. and he's been quite the dog.
All right, I'm going to use my dog of the week to get on the soapbox for the how pointless the win total stat is. I'm going with Cliff Lee. The guy's been pitching lights out. In his 9 starts, he has 7 quality starts. He scored in one game. He threw 10 innings and didn't give up any runs. He's got a 2.92 ERA, yet and still his win total is 0. He's 0-3. He's throwing the pill. He's throwing the rock, and I got to give him some love as my dog of the week, especially when I saw what Jose Valverde did this weekend against the Yankees. He somehow managed to blow a save. He came in the 9th inning. The Tigers were up by 1. Valverde walked 2 batters, hit 2 batters, bringing in the tying run. So he blew the save. And then in the bottom of the 9th, the Tigers score a run to win the game, and Valverde gets the win, which is completely insane and ridiculous to me. And it renders the win completely useless. And therefore, I'm giving Cliff Lee some love. He's my dog of the week. All right, how about a series of the week? You got one, Hank?
I do. Looking at the series of the week, had to pull it up for me for a second there. My series of the week has got to be the series down in Florida, the Marlins and the Rays. You look at the schedule now. All of a sudden, whoops. Marlins and woke up. The game and a half out of first place. You got two good managers in Madden and our boy over there. So I'm looking forward to this series.
How about you, Mike?
I'm taking the week off. No, but you know what I like is kind of an upstart versus a been there, done that. I like the Nationals at Boston this week. And I know Hank's tired of me talking about the Nationals. Heard enough about the Nationals. Not going to do anything Nationals. Stop talking about the Nationals in first place. Going to take it to Boston. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, and I ate a little bit of humble pie when you weren't here. So, you know, I ate a little crow. They playing.
And in my protest for Interleague Baseball, I'm going to go ahead and protest by not picking a series of the week this week because I despise interleague baseball. So let's keep it moving. Let's get into
the Atlanta,
fire.
Miami.
Stuff. What's that?
You can go with Atlanta, Miami, can't you?
It's about the protest. It's all about the protest.
All right.
I'm trying to make a point here. You're ruining my point.
My fault.
But yeah, I will be watching Atlanta and Miami. Thank you.
I am in the wrong. I apologize.
I'm trying to abolish interleague baseball, and you're fighting me. I thought we agreed on something. I thought we both agreed we didn't like interleague baseball.
We don't.
All right, let's
by the way, the Tigers
are
playing the Reds, too.
Mike.
So.
Yeah, we're going into Mike's wheelhouse. We're doing the buyers and sellers for the National League. I want to remind everybody that we're not saying they should be buyers and sellers now. We're saying at the trade deadline, which is July 31st, we think this team will be a buyer or a seller. And we're going to be leaning on you, Mike, as our National League guru. So we're going to jump it straight off to you with we'll start in the Central, your home division. The
wow.
Cubs.
What do
you got on the Cubs, buyers or sellers?
Cubs are sellers. Now let's preface this. I know Hank wasn't here last week, so let's say what needs to be said, which is with the extra wild card spot, more teams are in it later in the year. So really the only sellers that you're going to see are teams that are dead last and out and not going to be doing it. Other than that, other teams are going to have a tough time justifying selling. So the Cubs definitely fall in there as a team that is a seller. They need to get rid of some contracts. I look for them to move Garza just because of their arc of where they're going to be good, at least where they're planning to be good. It's probably 3-4 years away. And even if they sign Garza up to you wouldn't sign him to longer than a 4-year deal. He's not going to be there for it. I'd look to see him out of there. I'd look to see the one I'd like to get out of the Cubs is Marmol. I think he just needs a little more coaching, get his head on straight, but those guys are definitely sellers.
Okay, I got him as sellers too. What do you think about moving Castro if you get the right price?
I saw that, and it's a dumb idea. Let me put it that way. He's, what, 22 years old, 21 years old? You don't move 21-year-old all-star caliber players who are just getting better. You don't do it because you never get the return for it in that you need. And if you're talking about we need to build for 4 or 5 years from now, that means I need to get players that are 21 now, 19 now. He already fits that mold. There's no reason to trade him at this point because you won't get value back that matches what he can do.
Yeah, I agree. But Cubs do have a couple other pieces. I think some teams may have an interest in Ryan Dempster, who, again, he doesn't have – I think he only has one win, but his ERA is in the twos. And Brian Lahaire, I would move him now. I mean, the guy has 11 home runs already, doesn't have a long track record of doing it at the major league level, so I would definitely move him to a team that needs a slugging first baseman while he's hot.
Yeah, he reminds me of the guy from the A's you brought up last week, who was just
Sweeney.
Yeah, hitting the daylights out of the ball, and you're like, he's got no track record for this. Trade him now.
Yeah, definitely. Hank, do you have anything to add on the Cubs?
I do, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised. Another guy out there you guys didn't mention, but somebody who's looking for a bat down the stretch, Soriano may be someone they look to move to. You know, an older player now, but, you know, still got a lot of pop in his bat, and especially we're talking about in the American League with the extra spot. Somebody's going to find you another bat. Somebody's going to find you another outfielder. He may be somebody that they may be on the block as well.
Good point. But let's go to the next team, Death Smith Sellers, the Cincinnati Reds.
Wow, okay. Well, yeah.
just a little shot, Mike. Well, what do you have the Reds, buyers and sellers?
Of course they're buyers at this point. I don't know how much they can add to the payroll. They've got some a couple holes that they need to fill. Specifically in left field and at the leadoff position. I don't know what's out there necessarily for them. I don't think they're going to go out and get Carlos Quentin. I don't think they're going to get Kevin Youkilis, who could fill in at third base for him. But they'll be looking to bolster the bench. And so I look for them to make some minor moves. But, you know, that's it. They're not going to shatter any windows.
You know what? I too, agree with you. I think they need an outfielder and somebody who gets on base. I thought about third base, and I wanted to ask you, the kid they have over there, Frazier, I saw he's slugging like, what, 600, 700?
Yep.
Some insane number, but he has no track record of doing that. How do you feel about Frazier at third as a Reds fan?
You know, he's a good player. To me, he's Aaron Boone Light, okay? He's a guy who's never going to hit for a lot of average. He's not going to be a Gold Glove player. They actually moved him around quite a bit the last couple of years to find a spot for him because they did have a logjam at third base. So one thing that you may see them do this year is move him out to left. If they end up making that Youkilis deal, not that I think they will, Frazier does play other positions. So you could put him in left. The problem is you got Ludwig and Heisey. Now all of a sudden, you've got a logjam out there. But I like him, and that's another good example. If you got a kid who can play, play him. Just play him. Who knows? You may have a great player, and you never even knew it.
Free Dominic Brown.
That's right. That is right. And I know we're kind of through here, if you start looking at the rest of the division, it is the only one that I think surprises me out here is Milwaukee, and I think Milwaukee's going to be sellers here. Simply because they have two pitchers under contract just through the end of the year, Zach Greinke specifically and Sean Markham. And either you're going to see those guys signed to long-term contracts by the All-Star break or they're going to be dealt. And that's kind of the biggest surprise that I see in this division. Houston doesn't have anything to sell other than Wandy Rodriguez, maybe Brett Myers, but that would be it.
Okay. What about this team looks interesting to me. I want to get your take on it. The Pirates, I mean, I think they're definitely sellers. But, again, I don't know if they have a lot of pieces to sell.
Really? Sellers? You think the Pirates are sellers?
I don't either. Definitely. I don't think so.
Do you think they're ready to compete?
I think, okay, let's put it, now we talked this way about Kansas City, I think, it was Baltimore last week, and we talked about a team that hasn't won in a long time, all of a sudden is competitive. These guys, now let's not forget, these guys were competitive longer than the Reds last year past the All-Star break. They were within three games of the Cardinals and the Brewers. They have, if not the best, one of the best pitching staffs in the National League right now. What they don't have is an offense. Now, they do have the prospects that they can go out there and get some more bats in that lineup. I see them as buyers, not that they necessarily have a realistic shot of winning the division, but you got to win the fan base there, and you cannot give up on the first quality or decent team that you've had in Pittsburgh in 15, 20 years. You can't give up on it.
Okay, let me take you to task on this one a little bit, see if I can sway you to my side. We know what they did last year. They came out red hot, and then they fell. They added a couple pitchers, A.J. Burnett, Eric Bedard, and not much else, right?
Right, right.
Now, A.J. Burnett, he's rebounded. He's having a good year. Bedard, he's serviceable as well. Some teams will want those two. Knowing that the when the Pirates are ready to compete, and I'm talking be in the playoffs, Bedard and Burnett are not going to be focal points of that rotation. Why would you not move them now for young pieces who will be ready when you're ready to compete? I don't think they got Burnett as a long-term solution. I look at it similar to what the Oakland A's did when they got Matt Holliday. They got him because they knew he'd be a trade piece down the line.
Yeah, to me, you got to do something for your fan base, especially one in Pittsburgh. And we had this talk last week that the smart thing to do is to trade those players, but the things you have to do to successfully run a small market baseball team that hasn't won jack, even come close in so many years, is you got to have that first year over 500. And that's so important for the psyche of an entire baseball community and that baseball team, because it sets a standard. Here, guys, here's where we're at, and we're just going forward. And so I don't think you can sell off and be 5-10 games under 500 and try to sell that same garbage that you've been selling for 20 years. You got to capitalize it, and for that reason alone, I think Pittsburgh's going to be a buyer.
Now,
let me ask this question, though. I want to chime in here for a minute. You guys are going back and forth, but you made a point that if you've got these teams that are really buying for that one playoff spot, and Pittsburgh, as Mike you said, they hung in there a long time before they faded. How can you justify again if you are in a playoff race? If you are in a playoff race, buying off any of these players, even at Pittsburgh, I think Pittsburgh right now is probably the third best team, well, fourth best team in that division. But so how can you justify that, and if they are legitimately in that hunt?
Well, what I said was by July 31st will they be in it, and I don't think they will.
Why you got to be a hater? Did you not have a good trip to Pittsburgh this last week?
I went to Philadelphia.
Right, I get those two mixed up all the time.
Exactly, which is another reason they should be sellers, because you don't even know which city that they play in.
You waved at it on your way to Philly. Just admit it.
July 31st, Pittsburgh will not be in contention. They will not be over 500 come July 31st. Therefore, they should be sellers.
You don't have to be over 500 to be in contention. Be within five games of the wild card position. If I tell you that, if I tell you they're within three games at July 31st, are you buyers or sellers in Pittsburgh?
I'm selling.
Okay.
Because
and then now you've got
two teams. You're going to have two, maybe three teams in the East. The Reds are going to run away with this division, if not with the Cardinals behind them. And they're going to have somebody out West, which it looks like I'm going to win my bet with Hank, won't be the Dodgers. But the Pirates are not going to sniff the wild card.
Well, you know what? Let me put it this way. Wouldn't it be great if they did? Wouldn't that be a fantastic story? Wouldn't you root for that team to do a great job? And if they get anywhere close to it, isn't there going to be such a push of momentum behind them and behind the Pirates to go ahead and make that extra step to try and go get that?
I would definitely root for them. But if you could tell me five other players – besides that aren't named Andrew McCutchen on that team, you may convince me. I doubt you can.
I can name them up and down. I choose not to do it. But playing them tonight, so I can tell you who they are. But let me put it this way. So now you've got, what if you could get Greinke from the Brewers for the rest of the year as a rental player? Maybe you get Carlos Quentin. That would be a good target for Carlos Quentin to go to Pittsburgh. And you add two guys like that, and then you say, hey, let's wait until the last couple weeks of the year before we decide if we're going to re-sign these guys or not. But that could put a lot of momentum behind Pittsburgh and a lot of excitement in a town that's been dead for 20 years.
Oh, you're living in a fairy tale world, Mike.
I may be. You know, I agree with you. I don't think they have anywhere near the offense to compete over 162 games. I agree with you. That does not mean that they're not going to be relative on July 31st. And I hope they are, because I think baseball is a better place when you have more Pittsburgh, Cincinnati's, small market teams. Washington's not a small market, but non-powerhouses that are competing for it. And Pittsburgh is a team that just needs some victories.
Yeah, we all agree there. How about the NL? Have we pretty much covered the Central?
Sure, go for it.
All right, how about the NL West, Mike?
NL West, I think you've got, and I'll just list the quick sellers and buyers. I think you've got a pretty clear delineation between the Dodgers and the Giants. Those two are both going to be buyers. Both those teams' franchises have money to add payroll, the Dodgers especially now. And then you've got sellers down below with Arizona, Colorado, and San Diego. San Diego already looking to move half their team. They've got a lot of young guys coming up. You've got Alonso there. You've got Grandal there. So I think those bottom three are going to be looking to sell. Arizona, may be the surprise, but I think hangs right on. And I couldn't remember his name last week, but I thought Stephen Drew, when he's healthy, would be a good option for Detroit to kind of stabilize that up the middle defense that we were talking about. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, hey, if you ask me, I was hoping that because when I'm looking at the West and when you start talking about Detroit, I said it earlier, I'd like to see Marco Scudero over here, and I'm looking for Colorado to probably, sell off half of their team as well. So as far as up the middle player, I'd like to see him get, that's who I'm talking about.
Why don't you give us your rundown on the Dodgers, Hank? Buyers, sellers, where you at?
Oh, you know, I'm looking at the Dodgers as a definite buyer, and I'm looking for them to get another bat, maybe another corner outfielder. Especially with Kemp having these up and down injuries, but I look for the Dodgers to be a big splash on the trade market. I think that especially now with the new ownership, that they're going to be looking for another arm, another pitcher to go with Kershaw, and another outfielder. And again, we've mentioned back and forth. I think Soriano would be a good pick over there. Mike had even mentioned Euclid. So I could see a couple of those players going to the Dodgers, or at least a play for them.
All right, let me ask you this: do you really think Aaron Harang and Chris Capuano and Ted Lilly and these guys continue to pitch like they've been pitching?
What do we know about baseball, RJ? It's season to season.
I'm not saying what I think. I'm just asking you what you think.
I say, what do we know about baseball? It's season to season. I do. I mean, I'm looking at to be honest with you, I didn't expect the Dodgers to – I expected the Dodgers to fade at this point, okay? But also, I'm looking at the rest of the West. Okay, you're not getting the bang from your buck. Now San Francisco has been playing well, but you have these other teams that I think a couple of you mentioned Colorado as possibly winning in this division. But make no mistake about it, the Dodgers do have a lot of young talent. They've sustained it. Mattingly needs to be given some credit for doing a fine job with this team. I think they're going to be there to stay. And I do see them, being a part of this. Going back to what you said on the 31st with Pittsburgh, I expect the Dodgers to still be contending, mightily by July 31st.
You still feel strongly about our bet?
I do. I said, and that pop is getting colder and colder as the season goes on.
All right. Oh man. Well, all right. Let's. Anything else on the West?
I'll make a nice transition and say that I think the Dodgers are going to be a major player from a surprise seller in the East as we move over there, and I think that's where Cole Hamels ends up around the trade deadline. I think he's going to end up in L.A. I believe he's a West Coast kid. It's a good fit for him, and then they sign him to a long-term extension before the season's over. And I'll kick off the East with that. I think Philly's going to be a seller. I don't have a lot of faith in the Mets to keep this up, but I would say another big market team, not afraid to add. I wouldn't be surprised if you had Washington, Atlanta, Miami, and the Mets all looking to be buyers in a month and a half, with Philly being the lone seller.
Hold on. You can't drop a bomb on us like Cole Hamels is going to the Dodgers and then move on to the NL East.
He already went. He's already there.
I was, like I said, I was in Philly this weekend. I was listening to Sports Talk Radio. Now, you talk about keeping your fans happy. There is no way Philly fan will allow the Phillies to trade Cole Hamels. Those guys were insane when I was listening to the radio about the Phillies. And they have no basis for reality. There's no way Ruben Amaro Jr. can trade Cole Hamels. Not this year.
Can he sign him? That's the bigger question. Can he sign him?
He probably can't, but I relate it to, and we're going to touch on this with the Mets, I relate it to David Wright. The Mets probably can't re-sign him, but they can't trade him either. Just like they didn't do it with Jose Reyes, and they got nothing in return. Cole Hamels is a piece of the Philly fan expects the Phillies to compete every year. They expect them to be in it. Therefore, they're not going to sign off on a trade of Cole Hamels.
We'll see. We'll see. But I think if you see that team drop to, 8, 9, 10, if they get into that range of the Tigers and start looking at double digits almost, then they'll
fire sale.
With Ryan Howard not hitting, with, Rollins slow, all those, with an older team, and let's remember this, that correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the team that signed Cliff Lee short-term and then also let him, traded him, correct? Or let him go and then came back and signed him again. So just because they traded him, they're not going to sign him up again at the end of the year. You may get just a ton of players for Cole Hamels and still sign him as a free agent.
No, understand. I agree the Phillies should probably move some of their pieces, but I'm using the argument that you use for every other team about keeping your fan base happy. That's the only thing I'm basing my argument on.
All right, then who can they sell?
They can sell Shane Victorino.
Ooh. That's legit. Ruiz is having a wonderful year behind the plate.
No, they love that guy too.
Can't trade any. They'll trade Ryan Howard, and they'll trade.
I don't think the Phillies think that they're sellers, or the Philly fan. They don't think they're sellers, and therein lies the problem.
Yep.
I'd like to see Blanco back.
No, but really, I asked you about the Mets. What do you do with David Wright, Mike?
You know what? They centered their franchise around him a couple of years ago, him and Jose Reyes, and he really let him down. Now he's had a lot of injuries over the last couple of years and did not look like himself until this year came around. I don't know that never surprised me when it happens in a contract year. But if you have David Wright looking for $20 million a year, which is I think he's going to be asking for, I politely say no thank you on that. I just don't think he's worth the money. If you can get him for $15 million, $14 million a year for a four-year contract, I'd say go for it, but I just don't see that happening. I think they're going to play silly money with it, and he's going to price himself out of New York because they know what they've got. They know that they've got damaged goods who's putting together one heck of a year, but doesn't have a track record of doing that over a long period of time.
Okay, let me jump in real quick, let the listeners know. We're going to continue this conversation briefly on the extra inning segment. You won't be able to listen to it live, but you will be able to download it on iTunes. Again, just search Real Sports Guys in your iTunes search box, and we will come up probably about an hour or two after the show, so you will be able to hear the rest of the show. Just Real Sports Guys in your search box. So, Mike, are you saying that the Mets will be sellers then?
You know, I think that they're going to stay as buyers. I don't know that they're going to make a big investment in the team. I just look at what they have, and I think they're going to be around. You know, as you said before, there may be three teams coming out of the East, and, you know, there may not be three-game separation between all those teams because I don't see one that's head and shoulders above the others. The Mets have surprised this year, and I think that they can hold into it. And the difference between them and the Phillies is I think the Phillies have such an old roster. That's really where I'm pulling this from. That if they continue to stay injured, stay hurt, they're going to be looking to retool. And who knows, maybe they can trade for Dominic Brown and he can come and just be an influx of youth talent on that team.
Hey-o. what do you think, Hank? Are the Mets going to be buyers or sellers?
No, I can't see the Mets being a seller. I see them being a buyer. And I think again, you got to remember one thing. Everybody thinks they've got a shot this year, and I think that's going a long way into how they're going to be thinking down the stretch. If they're within 5 to 6 games, everybody's going to try to improve their team to get into that final playoff spot. I think it's something that we have never seen before. We're going to have a lot of teams that's going to be buyers that, there's going to be buyers that probably wouldn't have been in the past.
So do you guys have anybody selling in the NL East?
Philadelphia.
Philly fan is not going to allow it, I'm telling you guys. Those guys are a rare breed.
But you got to understand, Philly got to get younger. Philly know that they've got that pitching staff, but Philly, it's going to be hard for Philly to play down the stretch this second half of the season. Watch.
And let me put it to you this way. With Cole Hamels pitching the way he's pitching, you can legitimately ask for three of a team's top five prospects for 4 months or 3 months of Cole Hamels. Three of a team's top five prospects. And you start looking, now we start talking about all the buyers that are out there. And now it's not six or seven teams that are bidding for this, but you got 12 teams with a legitimate chance to get Cole Hamels. And now you got Pittsburgh going, hey, I got some really good prospects, and we got a real shot. What if we had Cole Hamels? Let's overpay and get him and send a message to our farm system that we can do this. I think Philly's got a great opportunity to bring in some major, major talent by trading Cole Hamels at the deadline and getting more than fair value for what he can provide you, especially considering there's no guarantee he's signing with you after this year anyway. I think it's a great opportunity to trade Cole Hamels, and I think it's a smart move.
I agree.
Hey, did we tape that?
I think we caught it on tape. It's just most people won't hear it, thank God. My guys, the Marlins, you said they're buyers. What are they looking for?
A new manager, I think. what are the Marlins looking for? Well, I think, you know, we can look for more pitching, for another starting pitching. I think Miami's another great example of a team that, I always go back to those Brewers because I think they're going to be two of the top trade targets out there. And Sean Markham, for me, is a guy that can come in there and give you some really good innings, and you're not going to have to overpay for him. So I think if you get additional starting pitching in that division, where I think that pitching may make the difference instead of a bat, that I would go look for that. And a guy like Markham, a guy like Dempster, Garza, could do that for you. And Miami's got a lot of young talent as well. So I think they'll have a lot of power to go ahead and get what they need.
Yeah. Anything you want to touch on in the NL East, Hank?
Again, I do see the Marlins as well as buyers. And like Mike said, I could see them going and trying to get another arm. I can also see them try to get another outfielder or two. You know, and we talk about, these other teams in the West is going to be selling. You know, I look for Cameron Maybin probably to be moved. Somebody like that to just try to build on that youth. You know, he started there. I mean, he was traded there. They might try to bring him back now. You know, so I look for them to also just be trying to buy and improve.
I hear you. I can't see him moving Maven. You think they would move Maven, Mike, the Padres?
Once again, look at the arc of the team. When do they think they're going to be good again, right? I think they feel they've got the startings of a team. They're, what, 2 years removed from missing out on the playoffs by a game, the last game of the year. So, no, I don't think they're going to move Maven. I think he's still too young. They're much more likely to move a Carlos Quentin-type player than him. And I don't see him moving Maven.
Yeah, you got to keep in mind, too, they just signed Maven to a very favorable 5-year deal. So they got him locked up.
Mm.
Anything else, fellas, before we sign off?
No, it's just getting interesting, though, isn't it? I like it. I like seeing where these teams are falling. You tend to know. Now, if I had told you when we started the year, you two specifically, that Detroit and Kansas City are neck and neck, you'd go, man, they're playing up to their potential. This is exciting. And then we found out they're both six games under 500. I mean, would you ever think to be at this point with the Detroit Tigers this year?
How long have you been waiting to pull that out of your notes?
You know what? We could go. That's a whole nother show. We talked about managers and how they prepare their team. I could take the whole hour myself.
On that note, Hank, give us a sign off, Hank.
All right, folks. Okay, ball game over. Drive home safe.
Peace.